Hi everyone, and welcome back to my gramophone show. It's been a while since I did this, and I've had a frantic September. This is October. At the end of October, I will have another frantic period of time when I go on a tour of Germany, Austria, Hungary, Czech Republic, Prague. There's even some talk of me going to Ukraine. I'm not sure if that's going to happen yet. So I've got to squeeze the next two gramophone shows into the next 10 days. That's the only time I have to do it. And then see if I can get them up online without any trouble as I normally have. Those of you who are hearing this for the first time should know that this is my monthly podcast based on the 78s in my collection, which I've put together since I was a little tiny boy. And they cover all sorts of types of entertainment. Today I'm going to begin with a 78 I acquired quite recently. Before, I've mentioned the fact that in America, in the early decades of the century, rather than recording people who were already famous on stage, they tended, there are exceptions always, but they tended to have a lot of comic songs sung and performed by people who were pretty much gramophone performers. They had nowhere near as big a career in live theatre as perhaps people in England who were the stars of musical who recorded. This is another example of this. This is a gentleman called Byron G. Harlan. Has to be American somehow. He was born in 1861 and he died in 1936. He's what they would have called in those days a minstrel singer. It was common to make fun of, or if that's the right phrase, sing in different dialects, because America was being founded by people from all over Europe, plus the emancipated slaves, so everybody had different accents, and they thought this was a great way of making humour. The particular group being featured on this record is obviously the immigrant Italian population, and this is a song about the biggest star of the age, who was the great tenor Enrico Caruso. This song was recorded in 1909 when Caruso was probably at the peak of his fame, and it's performed, as I say, by Byron G. Harlan, who, by the way, sometimes performed two-handers with somebody called Arthur Collins. Harlan and Collins, Collins and Harlan, they were sort of double act, but mainly, again, I think, on record. Be that as it may, somebody will probably contact me to tell me I'm completely wrong and they were very famous, but I don't think so. So, Byron Harlan, who was born 12 years before Caruso, is here singing a song which is called My Cousin Caruso. You can hardly make out what he's saying, as much because of the accent as because of the rather mushy quality of the 78 that I managed to buy. I've done my best to clean it up, but please forgive me if it isn't as pristine as I'd like it to be. Without more ado, Byron G. Harlan, My Cousin Caruso, 1909.
Something is the mat, off the fall of flat, good but probably yet, can find the route to break the man, off at the Metropolitan. 10 million people get the store, jump up with the roar, put them in the oar, they cry, Cruz no want to come, stand up, she goes on the bomb. My cousin Caruso, hey, kid, when he cut loose, stand up, don't shake it like it is, like it's that fish in the sea. Tell us the rest of
Well, of course, having that song gives me the excuse, because I haven't done so for some time now, of playing another one of the something like 250 recordings that the great Caruso himself made. My great uncle heard Caruso live in 1907 in Germany, and he told me, and his brother too, that Caruso, however well he sounds on record, live was quite sensational. Remember, Caruso did record into a horn. He never lived to make electrical recordings, so there are frequencies missing, and obviously part of the thrill of his voice wasn't there. That said, and I've often said this before, if he sounded this good through a horn, my goodness, how good was he live. Well, this time I'm not going to play you an operatic aria, but a song by Tosti called Ideali. Tosti is one of the great underrated composers of songs, I think. I prefer his songs to many a song written by Schubert. They're wonderful. He's limited, of course, but at his best, his songs are just wonderful. And all the great singers always chose to sing his songs. He lived in England and worked as a singing teacher and knew Queen Victoria, etc. So he was very highly connected. Nevertheless, the songs really are good. This recording comes from 1906, when Caruso's voice was at its lyrical best. He wasn't yet a tenor who would take on majority of the really heavy roles. He's just wonderful here. I've never heard a version of this to match up, and I've said that so many times when it comes to recordings of Caruso. So here is Caruso in Ideali by Tosti, 1906.
Thank you. ancora, e a me risplenderà del tuo sembiante una novella
Enrico Caruso, effortless singing, fantastic phrasing, just about as perfect as you can imagine that song recording to be. Incidentally, returning to the very first track on today's programme, it featured a sort of version of Vesti la Giubba. In 1909, I should think by that time, because it was recorded in 1907, Caruso had the very first ever million-selling record. It was indeed Vesti la Giubba, so that's probably why they used that aria as the basis for the song, as a sort of, well, like a signature tune for Caruso. However, let's move on to somebody just as brilliant in his sort of music as Caruso was in his. The phrasing is there, maybe not the great voice, but everything else about it is just wonderful, and I'm talking about Louis Armstrong. On the following recording, which is an absolute classic, he's recording with another absolute great, which is Earl Hines. Recently I've been transferring some cassettes I had to digital format, and these feature Earl Hines in the 70s. Earl Hines was born in 1903 and died in 1983. In other words, he lived to the age of 80. I remember him in Great Britain performing several times live. He was a tall man, probably 6'2", good looking, big, strong hands, as you can probably hear from the way he plays. He also sported possibly the worst wig I've ever seen. I don't know quite why, but he did. But it didn't matter, because when he came on stage, he just wiped everybody else off who had been playing before. Phenomenal pianist. He lost none of his early skill and inventiveness at the age of, 70, which he would have been when I heard him play. Here he is, though, as a young man, 25 years old, playing with Louis Armstrong. Earl Hines didn't come from New Orleans. He came from, of all places, not exactly famous for its jazz history. He was born in Duquesne, that's spelled D-U-Q-U-E-S-N-E, Duquesne, Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, basically, and nowhere near New Orleans, but a great pianist. Just as great on the piano, you might say, as Louis Armstrong on the trumpet. The partnership was wonderful. This is their famous duet. Nobody else is playing. This is recorded in 1928. It's called Weatherbird. It's short. It's to the point. I'm not the first one, possibly, to say that maybe the 78 format did a favour for jazz musicians, because it forced them to put everything they needed to say into 3 minutes. Sometimes, since the advent of the LP and the CD, jazz musicians can be a bit, shall we say, self-indulgent, and they take their solo and let it ramble over minutes where they've really said everything they needed to say in the first minute or so. Be that as it may, this particular duet is wonderful. Again, 1928, Earl Hines, Louis Armstrong, Weatherbird. Thank you. Louis Armstrong and Earl Hines in 1928. And for once, that was a really nice copy, and it came out rather well. Well, we're just dealing in greats today, so it seems, because, as I said before, it's very rare that any version of anything sounds better than when Caruso recorded it. Here's a possible exception. However, it's not a tenor who's singing this, and it's not Caruso's normal type of music. Toward the end of his recording career, Caruso did a version of Ombra Mai Fu by Handel. This is certainly not the sort of music he normally sang, and he sings it very well indeed. But there was a British singer, now there's a surprise, whose voice was so wonderful that you felt this is one of the times when, as they always say, it could have sung numbers out of a phone book. Kathleen Ferrier was a British contralto, born on the 22nd of April 1912, and she was born in Lancashire. Her father was a schoolmaster. Strangely, with a voice as great as she had, she didn't really think of herself as a singer. She first of all studied as a pianist and took some piano competitions in her stride when she was working as a telephonist for the General Post Office in the 30s. And she didn't really take up singing until 1937, where she was already 25 years old. But she soon won a big competition in Carlisle, and before long she was the big name that she remained for the rest of her life. She never really wanted to sing opera. She only ever sang a couple of operatic roles, and one of those was by Benjamin Britten, about whom the less said the better. Horrible music. The other one being Orfeo. There are complete recordings of that. She's wonderful in that. Very, very English singer then, and she preferred to sing in oratorio. This, however, is an opera. It's by Handel. It's called Circe's, and the famous aria is called Ombra Mai Fu. As I say, this is maybe even better than Caruso's recording, and that's saying something. It was recorded towards the end of the war and is simply magnificent. So, Kathleen Ferrier sings Ombra Mai Fu.
Thank you.
the wonderful voice of Kathleen Ferrier, and it's sad to think that at the age of only 41, just, 7 years after making that wonderful recording, she was dead of breast cancer. Whatever they can do these days, they could do precious little about it back in 1951. Well, from that to somebody, as they used to say on Monty Python, something completely different. Born on the 20th of February 1909 and dying on the 14th of October 1980, that marked the life of Oscar Marcelo Alemán. I hope I'm pronouncing that vaguely correctly, because I'm not sure how to pronounce Spanish. And Oscar was born in Argentina, and indeed returned there during the war and lived most of his life after that back home in Argentina. But from the age of 10, he sort of grew up in Brazil, and therefore his early formative years must have been spent listening to Brazilian music, at which he became more than just competent. However, he was fascinated with jazz and moved to Europe during the 30s. And while there, he ended up in Paris, where he became friends with Django Reinhardt, his original interest being Eddie Lang and Joe Benuti. He was hired by Josephine Baker, who I've featured already on my podcast, Tulita Band, and he played at the Café de Paris, and he even, as a solo act, toured Europe playing with Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington. You can't really get more important than that. He even formed his own band, which played at the Chantilly Club in Paris. He became friends with Django Reinhardt, as I said, and even was invited back to Django's Holy of Holies, his caravan. But although people call him the South American Django, though admiring Django, of course, he didn't play in the same way. He had all his fingers to begin with, and he didn't just use a plectrum with his right hand. He used a thumb pick and finger style. And so it's sort of misleading. He wasn't that similar, and he's in a way more American in his playing of jazz. However, what I have for you is him playing Brazilian music. By the way, he often played a Macchiaferri, just like Django did, so maybe that's why they were compared as well. He also used a National Steel resonator guitar. He used nylon string guitars and all sorts of guitars. He wasn't just a one guitar, one style person. Here he is playing one of the most famous of Brazilian tunes that became a hit in America later on, called Chico Chico No Fubá, which actually is the name of a little hummingbird in Portuguese, which may explain the sort of tune it is. Here is his version, and it's recorded on the 7th of September 1943. Oscar Alemán playing Brazilian music. Thank you. Oscar Alemán, wonderful, intriguing artist, and there are different sides to him. One day I'll put on one of his jazz tracks. Well, we're coming towards the end of the show. We've already had one great contralto. This is a great contralto in a completely different genre. The books don't say very much about this lady. Her name was Cleo Gibson. Everybody knows about Bessie Smith. She was part of that black, blues, and vaudeville circuit and was one of the greats. Cleo Gibson could have been just as great a name. However, I assume she was much younger than Bessie. Nobody seems to know when she was born or died, but the plain fact of the case is that just about the only couple of tracks known of her were recorded, or at least released, the very month of the Great Wall Street Crash. Needless to say, amongst other things, it destroyed the record market, at least for a while, and of course the first people to suffer economically were those at the bottom of the heap, and they tended to be black people. Surprise. So, probably the market for this great blues and vaudeville singer was destroyed before she started. Some people are lucky, some people aren't. We're the lucky ones because we still have these recordings. This one's one of those suggestive lyrics. It's called "I've Got Ford Movements in My Hips." You know, the way the Model T Ford used to move in those days. "I've Got Ford Movements in My Hips." That's the name of this song. Released, of course, in 1929. A wonderful track. Nice, clean copy. Good to listen to. Here it is. One of the lesser known treasures of my collection, Cleo Gibson, back in 1929. Well, just for a change, I haven't overrun, which means I can play one of my longer tracks to finish up with. Before I do so, as always, I want to ask any of you who've enjoyed this to tell all your friends, because I want to share this fantastic music with the world. I've discovered that the person who helped me put this up in the first place has also arranged that these podcasts are not only available from where you've probably found it, which is at Earl Oakin's Gramophone Show, which is earloakin.blogspot.com, but apparently is also available for free, download always free, on iTunes. So one of the few things you can download from iTunes without paying anything. So tell all your friends, Earl Oakin's Gramophone Show. Well, as always, as I say, I always play one of my tracks at the end of the show, just to prove that I do know something about music. This is a song I wrote many moons ago and was going to be recorded by Bing Crosby. And I met him, but sadly he went off to play golf the next week in Spain and died having won the match, so he never got round to recording it. Well, I'm getting to the age now where I can sing it, because it's got one of those lyrics that requires you to be of a certain age. So I have indeed recorded it. It's called I Belong. I hope you'll enjoy it. And, well, here it is. So until the next time, which I think will be my Christmas show, I say au revoir and thanks for listening.
Drifting through my years, I seldom stopped to think. No time for fears. But when I found myself alone, I asked myself, do I belong? I belong. I've loved, loved and lost each time. And how I cried when I was in my prime. And though I fell in love again, when could I say, now I belong? So fly, why should I remember the time leading to September, the day as if they knew that only you could find. Where I belong. They say never count the cost, and then you turn to find what you have lost. But you gave all there is to give, a place to go where I belong. I are by my side. Oh, how my heart fills with joy and pride to think that you have come to me and let me see that I belong. So fly, why should I remember the time leading to September, the day as if they knew that only